Thank you, everybody, for coming this afternoon. I hope you can all hear me okay. My name is Jason White, and my research focuses on biomass sorghum production systems and the various management effects treatments that you can see here. Here's a brief overview of the presentation and the basic topics that we're going to discuss. I'd like to begin with the main reasons why we're going into this research. Is there's a federal mandate, as most of you probably know, to increase biomass and biofuel production. 16 billion gallons of the national fuel supply will need to be will include a 60% greenhouse gas offset relative to an equivalent gasoline supply. It's been estimated that this will require approximately 50 million acres of cropland. There are a variety of biofuel feedstocks that can be used that may be better adapted to certain production niches or management strategies or terrains. Our research focuses on biomass sorghum, which has been shown to be highly versatile across a wide geographic area. You can also drop it into and out of production as needed since it's an annual crop. It's shown very high productivity versus corn and switchgrass systems especially. A little bit more about biomass sorghum. The variety that we're using is photoperiod sensitive, so it doesn't flower until late October, even November in our area. It's a C4 photosynthesis plant, so it stays vegetative and highly productive, which means it has a high yield potential. It's resistant to a lot of biotic and abiotic stresses. Historically, it has had a low breeding priority, so there's still a lot of untapped genetic potential there. And unfortunately, we're going to be removing a large amount of biomass with these production systems, so there's still a lot of management considerations that go into these systems, and ultimately what we're trying to do is optimize these production systems. This leads me into the objectives. We'd like to quantify how yield and nutrient removal by biomass sorghum and soil properties are affected by four main treatment factors: location, rotation, fertilization, and residue return. We're using a systems-based agricultural approach, so we're trying to approximate what producers would do in the field. Here you can see some of our field plots. These are the continuous sorghum plots on the left-hand side and rotated sorghum here on the right. Plots are about 15 meters long by 5 meters wide. So I'd like to get into the experiment design a little bit now. It's a 2x2x2 by 3 factorial randomized block design. We have two locations at College Station, which is in East Texas, which is a wetter and a little bit cooler than Weslaco, which is down in South Texas, about 300 miles south, which is drier and warmer. We have two cropping sequences, either continuous sorghum, which will be denoted in my graphs in this presentation as SS, or a biannual rotation with corn, denoted in graphs as CS. Two fertilization levels, either no nitrogen or full nitrogen, which the full nitrogen initially started as 300 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. I know it sounds like a lot, but we estimated that we would be pulling a lot of nitrogen out of the system in the biomass. We adjusted this down to 250 kilograms the following year based on what we found the first year, and that level has remained constant since then. We have we're also returning residue, either 0, 25, or 50% of the material that we harvest from each plot. After we sample and weigh it, we return it back to the respective plot. So I'd like to get into the methodology a little bit now. We have been taking yields in the fall, at the end of the growing season, and we take a subsample of that for chemical composition analysis. At the outset of the experiment, we analyzed soil down to a depth of 1 meter at these following listed depth increments. We also have sampled each spring prior to planting subsequently and analyzed these for malic 3 extractable nutrients, total carbon, and nitrogen. So I'd like to get into a little bit of the results now. For the initial soil characteristics that we found, here's a table listing at each of the locations and the depths and the respective soil property here. You can see in general that these soils are low in organic carbon, They're calcareous soils, so the total carbon is a little bit higher, especially down at depth. They're high, medium or high in macronutrients. So these legacies have a long history of tilled cropping, decades of fertilized tilled cropping. So we expect to find these properties, and these are the types of soils that we expect to grow these biomass sorghums in. I'd like to point out that our soils at Westlaco had a little bit higher macronutrient profile than the soils at College Station. This may come into evidence in some of the yield results that I'm about to discuss. So our first year yield results in 2008, we saw that location had no significant effect on yield, but we did get about 23 megagrams per hectare of biomass sorghum that year. That's dry weight, and fertilization did have a significant effect at a P level less than 0.1. We got about a 10% bump due to the fertilization that we pumped into the system there. Biomass return had no significant effect this year, but we didn't expect to find it since we just started doing that treatment in the fall of that year. So our yield results for the next year, in 2009, this is where our rotation also comes into play. We found significant results due to location, rotation, and fertilization. At Westlaco, we had a little bit higher yields on average than College Station. This may be because of those fertility aspects that I mentioned earlier. Also, we had a longer growing season this year, about 3 to 4 weeks additional. One thing I'd like to point out is that the rotated sorghum plots, these are all the white bars here, performed significantly higher than the continuous sorghum plots, regardless of fertilization. The unfertilized plots are the bars with the hatch marks there. So the rotation is playing a very strong effect here, even stronger than fertilization. And this year we also didn't find an effect on biomass return. These are the means of biomass return across the different fertilization rates and return rates. There's a picture of us returning the biomass here. This may be, although the mass return had no significant effect, it may be a legacy of we have very highly fertile soils. The experiment is ongoing, and we are going to monitor this to see if biomass return ends up having an effect at a future date. I'd like to get into the nutrient uptake now. There's a lot going on in this table. This is basically the chemical composition in the aerial biomass that we found each year across the locations and treatment levels. I've highlighted here the treatments that were significantly higher than the corresponding treatment. So we have higher nutrient uptake in 2008 at Westlaco for NPK, and we see the same thing in 2009, and also carbon in the above ground biomass, carbon fixation. Fertilization also had a significant effect in nutrient uptake, so where we're creating all this biomass, we're getting a corresponding uptake in the aerial biomass of nutrients. And rotation, where this comes into play in the second year, where that increased our yields, we're also increasing our nutrient uptake here. I'd like to point out that we're pulling out about 300, 350 kilograms per hectare of potassium on average here, about 30 kilograms per hectare of phosphorus, and 200 or plus or so kilograms of nitrogen per hectare on our fertilized plots. So this is going to be reflected somewhat in our below ground soil change. This is the changes in the soil profile over time. I've got 8 of these graphs. I'm going to go over these first couple in detail so you can see what's going on, and then I'll go through the rest a little bit faster. On the y-axis, you can see the soil profile here. This is the soil surface up at zero, down to a depth of 1 meter. These are change numbers over time. The x-axis represents the particular element that the graph refers to. This is 2009 values minus 2008. So if we gained that in that particular element, the points will be further over to the right. So for example, this fertilization graph here, we can see all these points that are in white are fertilized plots, and they lie further over to the right than our unfertilized plots. So we saw a gain in soil organic carbon due to fertilization down at the depth of 20 and 50 centimeters. And rotation, the continuous sorghum plots are the white dots where we're producing all this sorghum biomass. We also increased soil organic carbon at the surface and all the way down to a depth of 50 centimeters. For total nitrogen, we increased surface nitrogen in our fertilized plots down to a depth of maybe about 20 centimeters, although there's no significant difference here. It's not surprising. However, in the continuous sorghum plots, we increased our surface nitrogen down to a depth of 15 centimeters. So while we're putting all this nitrogen into the system, we're not depleting our soils for nitrogen. I'd like to get into the extractable phosphorus now. This is relatively interesting. One thing you see in our fertilized plots, where we're increasing a lot of biomass, producing biomass, we're increasing our surface phosphorus concentrations. We're also increasing phosphorus concentrations in our continuous sorghum plots. However, we do see a corresponding decrease down in the subsurface, down to a depth of 50 centimeters, for phosphorus in our continuous sorghum plots. For potassium, we see similar effect as phosphorus. It's not surprising. If you remember, we're pulling out 300 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare. We're seeing an increase at the surface down to a depth of 5 centimeters or so due to fertilization and rotation. So where we're producing biomass, we're increasing the surface concentrations of potassium, which I suspect this may be a leaf litter or fine root material accumulation at the soil surface. However, we are seeing corresponding decreases, dramatic decreases in our continuous sorghum plots across the board, almost all the way down to 80 centimeters. And we're also seeing where we're fertilizing plots and producing more biomass, we're drawing out more potassium. So in conclusion, I'd like to summarize that rotation was a very strong determination of crop yield and nutrient uptake. Nitrogen fertilization also increased growth and yield, but to a lesser extent than rotation did. Continuous sorghum and fertilization treatments increase soil organic carbon. This could be important if these are adopted as a biofuel production feedstock. This could go a long way towards green credits if we're sequestering soil organic carbon. We saw that sorghum may increase the soil nutrients at the surface as well as total nitrogen. However, this large removal of nutrients in the above-ground biomass resulted in a decrease in extractable nutrients in the subsurface. This may pose some problems for our long-term sustainability of these systems if we don't replace what we're drawing out. And with that, I'd like to thank the following people and AgriLife Research for sponsoring this, and I'll take questions. Thank you. That's a good question. I have been pondering that quite a bit. I suspect that there are some plant interactions going on. We had a very dry winter that year. There was still a lot of undecomposed residue, so especially in our sorghum plots. So there could have been some nitrogen immobilization there. There could be also some allelopathic effects going on. Sorghum has been documented as being pretty phytotoxic as the residue is. Or it could have also gotten a delayed start since we had so much residue remaining there. The soil surface may have actually been a little drier and cooler. That's a good point. I also have some sulfur numbers that the results corresponded very strongly with the phosphorus and potassium decreases. I didn't present those for time constraints.
Yeah, we see a lot of sulfur from wet deposition, mm-hmm. from the building part because of the shredding techniques. So we don't get that three-quarter. Okay. Another question?
Yeah, you mentioned this, by the way, that has a decrease in the chemical level. And I have a question. Has it was aware that there was a carbon footprint from chemical level and the chemical level of life?
That's a good question. We just put on ammonium nitrate. We didn't apply a carbon source. However, what we did see was increases in soil carbon down to a depth. We got it on the surface, but also down to a depth of 50 centimeters. So I suspect it's a combination of the aerial biomass going back into the system, but also a lot of the root system of the plants remaining in the system. We're producing about 23 megagrams of biomass in the surface, above ground biomass every year. So there's a large root system there to support that. I think that it's the remaining root matter undecomposed from the previous year's crop. That's what I suspect. We did both organic carbon and total carbon values. They're calcareous soils, but yeah. Oh, that's so your question was how does nitrogen fertilization affect the quality of sorghum versus quality of the corn? Well, if I understand your question right, you know, if we adequately fertilize the plots, we're going to have better grain return yields on our corn, which is what we've seen. I didn't show the corn data, but fertilization increased our corn yields. It also increases the tissue concentration of nitrogen in the biomass sorghum. So we're going to go a little bit more in depth into the quality analysis of the plant material, but just as a by weight basis, you know, where we're putting more nitrogen into the system, we see a higher percentage of nitrogen in the biomass. I guess you could consider it luxury consumption.
Another question first. Okay, let's give another hand.